Fine Arts This Week, a look at people, organizations, events, and activities surrounding the fine arts community nationwide. I'm your host, Keith Peters. Thank you for joining us. Today, as our very special guest, we're happy to welcome pianist Terry Eder, who speaks to us today from her home in New York City. Terry has just released a new CD, Erno Dohnányi, Piano Pieces on the Hungaroton Classic label, and it consists of some 75 minutes of music from a very underrated composer. Terry, thanks for joining us today on Fine Arts This Week. We appreciate your taking the time to speak with us.
I'm very pleased to be here, Keith. Thank you for having me.
Well, first of all, let's start at the beginning. How did you get started playing the piano?
Well, I grew up in Detroit. No one in my family is a professional musician, but we did have a piano in the house. My parents wanted all of their four children to study music. Of course, as the youngest, my parents thought at age four that I was too young to study, so they did not give me lessons, but my older siblings were studying, and I would listen to their lessons. And after their practice session, I would go over to the piano and by ear play their pieces perfectly and correct them on all of their mistakes. So my parents decided that I was not too young to take piano lessons, and I started. I don't remember it being a conscious decision. I just always played the piano.
When did you find that it was a passion for you?
Well, that's a great question. I started performing as a young child. I gave my first solo recital when I was 16 at the Detroit Art Institute. But in those days, I did not know that I was going to be a performer or that I wanted to be a performer. And I had a bit of an epiphany when I was a senior in high school, or perhaps a junior in high school. I had a friend who was a fantastic violinist. She played beautifully and soulfully, and she was very accomplished. And I always loved to listen to her play. And she found out that she had some type of rare heart ailment, and the doctors told her she had to stop playing the violin. And at this point, I felt what a terrible tragedy this was, that this girl had a talent to convey music to an audience, and she was unable to do so. And I felt that I had a gift to do that, and I was able to do it. And at that point, I felt this is something I should do because I can do it and other people can't. They don't have that opportunity. And since I do, that's something I want to do.
There are many people out there that have talent but don't hone that talent. And that has always been kind of the big thing, whether it be a performer, a composer, whatever. What kind of discipline did it take for you to eventually become the pianist that you became?
It takes a tremendous amount of discipline. There are hours and hours of work that go into it, and the discipline is not only sitting at the piano, but it is learning really how to listen and how to make the most of your time. And I think that that, for me, has been the most difficult part of it. We all love to play the piano, those of us who do, and we love to listen. We love to play things and listen to them, and that's a totally different process than practicing and focusing and really, really being hard on oneself to hear everything and to immediately try to correct or change what sounds are not the sounds that you want to make. And that is a completely different activity from simply playing the piano, and it requires a huge amount of concentration. In addition to that, of course, I think it's very important to listen to other people play, to listen to other music written by the composer that one is studying, and to listen to music that is unfamiliar, and to hear other performers so that one knows the possibilities of sound production, what can be done in terms of sound, in terms of phrasing, in terms of breathing, and to have the discipline also to try to incorporate those things in one's own playing. So I think it requires an openness and a willingness to really focus and to be very hard on oneself and not let things slip by and say, well, that will work. That would be okay, but just okay is really not enough to be a fine performer.
What was your breakthrough as a performer?
Well, I won a competition from Artists International, which chooses players, not just pianists, but other all instrumentalists, to perform a New York debut. And I was fortunate enough to be offered a New York debut, which I performed in 2004 at Carnegie's Weill Recital Hall. And Artists International subsequently invited me back to perform in Alice Tully Hall at Lincoln Center in 2006 and at Carnegie's Zinkel Recital Hall in 2008. And those concerts, I don't know if you would say a breakthrough, but I think for me they were extremely important because when one plays in a big hall on an important stage, your level rises dramatically. You just have this sensation that you're extraordinarily lucky to be playing on these stages, and you have a real responsibility to absolutely go beyond your best. And being pushed to that level really made me rise to the occasion.
You're also teaching, if I understand correctly. What do you find are the, for lack of a better phrase, the gear shifts you have to make between being a teacher and a performer?
I wouldn't say there are huge shifts. Talking about music is something I do in my head to myself, and so I would just verbalize those thoughts to my students. A lot of the process that I go through when I play has become very conscious. I don't practice unconsciously. I need to tell myself this is what I need to do now. And I do the same with my students. I ask them how can, first of all, to listen to what sounds they make, and then how do they think they can make it better? Are those the sounds they want to hear? We talk about the music, the analysis of the music, the articulation, everything in the music. Articulation would be one example. If someone plays a staccato, I would ask them, what are the different kinds of staccato that you can play? What do they sound like? How do you make them? Which one do you think is appropriate here? And then how do we do it? So it's the same process that I go through, and I find that, you know, even children can adopt this process and love to think for themselves and figure out what the possibilities are, like a puzzle.
Let's take a look now. You have decided to focus a lot of your time and efforts as a performer on the works of Hungarian composers. Why did you decide on that?
Well, I came to that through a kind of a combination of opportunity, the desire to develop a new interest, and finding something to set me apart from the masses of pianists out there. What really gave rise to that was my desire to live in Europe, to live somewhere where English was not spoken, and to get exposure to European musical culture firsthand. So when I finished my master's degree at Indiana University, I was looking for a place to go in Europe and a grant to help me pay for those expenses. I had a Hungarian teacher at the time, Balint Vajny, who studied with Dohnányi. He first suggested that I study in Budapest. That was the first that I had that idea. And after that, I investigated. I went to listen to many well-known Hungarian pianists, such as András Schiff, Dezső Ranki, Zoltán Kocsis, and I found the level to be extraordinary. And I put together a grant proposal to study 20th century Hungarian composers of piano music in Budapest. At that time, I had only played one piece by Bartók. I did not have familiarity with Hungarian composers, but I thought it would be wonderful to live in Europe, to live in Budapest, and to be forced to study a very foreign language.
What did you find when you got there, and how has it enriched you?
Well, at the time I went to Budapest, this was in the 1980s, and at the time, Hungary was still behind the Iron Curtain. So the experience was something totally unique and one that I'm very glad that I had, just the exposure to such a different style of government and way of living was fascinating to me. That said, it was very difficult. There were very few Westerners, Americans, specifically in the country that year. People did not speak English. Hungarian is a very, very difficult language to learn. However, I did so. I think the biggest impression was from the musical life, the way that the musical life pervades the culture. Every night there were concerts. They were always full. People at the bus stop would ask me what was I doing in Hungary when they heard my accent and thought I was not Hungarian. They said, "What are you doing here?" And I would say, "Well, I'm studying piano." They would say, "Oh, really? Who are you studying with?" I would say, "Zoltán Kocsis." "Kocsis, he's my favorite. I heard him play Bartók III last week." This would just be anybody at the bus stop. Not necessarily a musician, certainly not a musician, but that type of attitude toward music and appreciation of music so widely throughout society is not something that you find very often in the U.S. And to me, that was a real revelation.
How did this develop you as an interpreter?
Well, I find that this music is very communicative on an emotional, human level. Of course, Hungarian music is not all the same. It's not possible to lump all Hungarian composers together. But the rich musical tradition, and particularly the basis of folk song that one finds in so much Hungarian music, I feel an affinity for this type of music. And I think it enables me to convey the music. I feel that this music has a lot of soulful human emotion inherent into it. And bringing that out of the music feels natural to me. In other words, I think that from living in a place where I speak the language that is inherent in the music. For example, a lot of Hungarian music is based upon the inflections of the Hungarian speech. And being able to immerse myself in both the language and the origins of this music from a linguistic point of view and from the point of view of the musical culture, the folk music, the ancient tunes, has given me a deeper understanding that I can carry to other music, and which gives me an affinity for this music in particular.
Is there anything in your own personal background? Do you have any Hungarian links there?
You know, I like to say that I was Hungarian in another lifetime. I actually don't that I know of, although my family background is Eastern European. My mother was Romanian, and my father's family came from the Austro-Hungarian Empire. To my knowledge, we are not Hungarian, although maybe way back many years ago there could have been. But I've had several Hungarian teachers, and I seem to have important Hungarian connections running through my life.
Let's get down to the album now. How did you get involved with Dohnányi's music?
Well, when I was studying in Budapest, I discovered Dohnányi as a composer. I, of course, knew that my teacher, Bálint Vázsonyi, had studied with him, and I was aware that he was an important piano teacher. However, I didn't know his compositions until I explored. And I found that his output is vast, and, his music spans such a wide span of 20th century music. He was born in 1877 and died in 1960. And during those years, very, very many styles of music came and went. And he was party to a lot of history that influenced him. I like the variety of his music. For example, he admired Brahms very much, and his early pieces show Brahms' influence very strongly. The four piano pieces, Opus 2, which are on the disc, are real examples of this. They resemble very much the Klavierstücke of Brahms. And then he changed to some extent by the teens. For example, in 1916, he wrote six concert etudes, the Opus 28, which are very much etudes in the style that Chopin wrote etudes, and that they're technically very difficult, very virtuosic, and very beautiful pieces. But his harmony starts to get a little more adventurous at this point, and continues to be adventurous. He also used folk music, for example, in the Pastorale from 1920, again, which is on the disc, that is based on a Hungarian Christmas song. So he, too, had that background in quite a few pieces as well. And then the six piano pieces, Opus 41, which are from 1945, use old forms. However, they have progressive harmonies. You find unusual dissonances, unusual resolutions. You find sonorities that one might find in Debussy. So the pieces become more adventurous, even though Dohnányi is thought of as pretty much a romantic composer from the point of view that his pieces are tonal pieces.
That's one of the things I noticed about the album is the fact that every piece on the album seems to be very much immediately accessible to people.
Yes, indeed. I think that's one of the great things about Dohnányi, and a reason why he should be heard much more. He left a number of wonderful and audience-friendly works that represent a variety of styles, and both audiences and performers like to hear and to explore less well-known music that is worthwhile. This music is challenging for the performer, and yet very accessible and enjoyable to audiences.
We should also mention the fact that he eventually wound up here in the United States and finished both his career and his life teaching down in Florida. How did his moving to the United States, from what you can see from your perspective, affect his music?
Well, that's a hard question for me to answer. My teacher, Balint Vajony, studied with him in Florida, as did his wife. And several other pianists who of renown studied with him in Florida. So I think he was able to spread his influence more by coming to the U.S., and that's probably the reason he's as known as he is today in the U.S., although he's still not very well known. But his students have become teachers themselves, many of them, in this country. And I imagine that they probably teach some of his pieces as well.
How did you wind up choosing these particular pieces for the album? How did the album come together?
Well, I wanted to have a real representation of his music from early to late. So I chose the four piano pieces, Opus 2, which, as earlier described, are very Brahmsian, and they are from the 1890s, still very romantic pieces. I wanted to have a folk-based piece, hence the Pastorale. The Schubert Dohnányi Valse Noble is an arrangement of Schubert waltzes, a concert piece, and Dohnányi was known for playing and arranging other works by other composers and performing them. So this is also one aspect of his output that is important. And the six piano pieces, Opus 41, represent his late style and, the variety of styles that he employed later on in his life. Those are from 1945.
What kind of support did you get from the Hungarian label in putting this together?
Well, they were very supportive. Initially, they felt it was not a project that they wanted to take on. They have released Dohnányi recordings in the past, I convinced them that those recordings were outdated, perhaps. Just not that they weren't wonderful recordings, but they were old. The recording techniques were not as well-developed at the time they were recorded. The six piano pieces had been recorded by Dohnányi himself, I believe, on two occasions. However, if there were any other recordings of it, you know, perhaps one or two at most, it's been very underrepresented on disc. Likewise, the Valse Noble. Dohnányi himself recorded it. But this is music that you don't find well represented on disc, and I felt that there was room, certainly, for this recording, and I was able to convince the folks of Hungaroton of that as well.
What are you looking at in the future, Terry?
Well, I have just recorded a disc of wonderful Bartók works, which I expect will be released in early 2015 on the MSR label, which is an American label. And it's a wonderful collection of folk-based music, which is just also a great cross-section chronologically, as well as the type of repertoire represented.
As we close out here, we're going to hear one of the pieces off the album. It's part of the six piano pieces, Opus 41, here performed by Terry Eder. Tell us a little bit about Cascade.
Well, Cascades is a virtuosic piece. Dohnányi played it very often as an encore, and it sounds very much like its title. There are cascading arpeggios and broken chords all up and down the keyboard. Unusual harmonies in some cases. It's in F-sharp major, and so there are a lot of black keys involved in the piece. And it's swirling, and it can be thought of perhaps as water music, because you do hear the cascades of notes running down. And it's, I think, a very effective piece. It's a lot of fun to play, and it's always a hit with audiences.
Let's hear that piece now. Here is Cascade from the Six Piano Pieces, Opus 41, by Erno Dohnányi, performed by pianist Terry Eder.
Thank you.
That was pianist Terry Eder performing Erno Dohnányi's Cascade from his Six Piano Pieces, Opus 41. And Terry, thank you so much for joining us on Fine Arts this week. We really appreciate your taking the time to speak with us about your album on the Hungaroton label. Again, it's Erno Dohnányi's Piano Pieces performed by Terry Eder. Terry, thanks again.
Thank you, Keith.
That's Fine Arts This Week, a presentation of Educational Media Corporation. Fine Arts This Week spotlights people in the arts and arts groups around the country. Information on the people and groups featured on Fine Arts This Week is available at classicsradio.org and at our Facebook page at facebook.com/CC Classics RRadio/. Our theme music is the introduction to the ballet Pulcinella by Igor Stravinsky from Sony Classics, with the composer conducting the Columbia Symphony Orchestra. Remember that it is only through your support that Classics Radio and programs like Fine Arts This Week continue week by week. Click the donate button on our website, classicsradio.org, or send your contribution to Classics Radio, Post Office Box 905, Spotsylvania, Virginia, 22553. That's Classics Radio, Post Office Box 905, Spotsylvania, Virginia, 22553. I'm your host, Keith Peters. Join us next week and every week for stimulating and interesting interviews from the arts community nationwide on Fine Arts This Week.